Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for August 9th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Mark Von Zastro about a new study that explores the mechanism by which morphine acts as a partial agonist of mu-type opioid receptors. Von Zastro is a researcher in the Department of Psychiatry and the Department of Cellular and Molecular Pharmacology at the University of California, San Francisco. Welcome, Dr. Von Zastro.
Thank you.
Your paper that's in the current issue of Science Signaling is on morphine's action as a partial agonist of mu-type opioid receptors. Can you first describe what a partial agonist is and how partial agonists differ from full agonists?
Generally speaking, a partial agonist is a compound that activates the same receptor as a so-called full agonist, but upon binding to that receptor, is less effective than the full agonist at eliciting a particular biological response. The concept of partial agonism is relative, however, and it's really defined by comparison to another ligand that activates the same receptor. Usually, this comparison is made to an endogenously produced agonist, that is, a compound that is thought to activate the receptor under normal physiological conditions. Such natural ligands are typically defined as full agonists. Morphine, for example, is a plant-derived alkaloid compound that has powerful effects when administered exogenously as a drug. It elicits these effects through activating the same mu-type opioid receptors as are activated by endogenously produced neuropeptide ligands, such as endorphins and enkephalins. However, when one looks carefully at specific readouts of opioid receptor activation, usually this means receptor-regulated biochemical response or an electrophysiological response, morphine is a partial agonist. This means that it is less effective or less efficacious, to use a pharmacologist's term, than an opioid neuropeptide at eliciting a particular receptor-mediated response.
So the partial agonists don't elicit the same full response that a full agonist or the natural ligand would do. Does a partial agonist ever induce responses that a full agonist does not?
That's extremely interesting. This is something that we and others are really only beginning to investigate. The idea of partial agonism really is derived from finding things that drugs don't do when compared to endogenously produced ligands. I think as people are looking harder at this question, they are finding that drugs can produce receptor-mediated effects that are either not induced by or weakly induced by endogenous ligands. So I think the other side of this coin, in fact, is very interesting and an area of active investigation in many laboratories.
At the cellular level, how does activation of mu-opioid receptors by morphine differ from activation of these receptors by their endogenous peptide agonists?
It's been known for many years that morphine elicits various measures of mu receptor-mediated signaling less strongly than opioid neuropeptides, as I just mentioned. And also, as I just mentioned, the opioid neuropeptides are generally considered full agonists for these receptors. Work carried out over the last decade or so investigating opioid effects on mechanisms of receptor regulation has emphasized differences between opioid ligands even more strongly. And some of these differences are really evident when one studies these regulatory mechanisms at the level of individual cells. For example, when one examines regulated endocytosis of opioid receptors, this is an important regulatory process that's elicited by receptor activation. Morphine is a much less efficacious, to use that same term, agonist than neuropeptides, as well as less efficacious in terms of driving this regulated endocytic process than some other opioid drugs that are interesting and clinically used. Accordingly, morphine-induced activation of opioid receptors tends to leave receptors at the cell surface for a longer period of time after activation, whereas receptor activation by other agonists, those typically called full agonists, causes the receptors to be removed from the plasma membrane much more rapidly and therefore taken away from accessibility to extracellular ligands.
In this study, you address the molecular mechanism that distinguishes receptor activation by partial versus full agonists. And so how does activation of mu opioid receptors by morphine differ from activation of those same receptors by a peptide agonist?
Yes, this is really the main focus of this present study. We already knew, based on work carried out by a number of groups, including ours, that agonists stimulate phosphorylation of opioid receptors, and that morphine drives net phosphorylation of opioid receptors less strongly than opioid peptides. We also knew that phosphorylation of receptors can promote their endocytosis. And we actually know quite a lot about the cellular machinery and receptor interacting proteins responsible for this process. What we did not know is really how differences between agonists are manifest. One possibility is that morphine's reduced endocytic activity is simply a consequence of its producing the same phosphorylated receptor form or forms, but an overall amount less than produced by opioid peptide. This would be consistent with sort of a mass action view of partial and full agonism. Another possibility is that morphine and opioid peptide actually drive preferentially the formation of different phosphorylated receptor forms. And by doing so, the formation of such agonist selective phosphorylated forms could engage the endocytic machinery differently.
So it could be a quantitative or a qualitative difference, and that's what you wanted to find out.
Correct. And in fact, right, that's a very good way of thinking about it. And in fact, our results do identify qualitatively different phosphorylated receptor forms. But there's also a quantitative part to this, because what we also found was there's not a clean separation between morphine and opioid peptide. That is, opioid peptides can be far more effective than morphine at producing certain phosphorylated forms, and phosphorylated forms that are relevant to endocytosis. But they do so disproportionately relative to their production of other phosphorylated receptor forms. They do not produce exclusively different receptor forms. This we were not able to find between morphine and opioid peptide. But I think that's a second lesson that comes from this study.
You use evolution of the system and what's there by nature to inform how you think about and how you address experimentally questions about receptors and their interactions with ligands. Are there endogenous ligands that act as partial agonists, like morphine on the mu opioid receptor?
This is actually a really interesting question. There's actually an old literature that suggests that there are actually endogenous morphine-like compounds in vivo. You know, the physiological relevance of those compounds, I think, remains to be established, but certainly there is some evidence for the existence of morphine-like compounds in tissue extracts, for example. But in terms of the well-accepted opioid receptor endogenous agonists, they fall into the neuropeptide class, several families. And these neuropeptides, as I mentioned, are generally considered full agonists. But what's kind of interesting, even there, if you look carefully at the cellular level, the effects of these compounds, and this has been really done largely by other laboratories, not so much in ours, but it's possible to show that different opioid neuropeptides actually differ from one another, at least to some degree, in their relative agonist efficacy as assessed using various pharmacological criteria. So even there, at least formally speaking, there may already be evidence for differences in efficacy among even the endogenously produced and well-established opioid receptor ligands. My personal view is that it remains to be determined to what degree these differences in efficacy are important, and at least so far, it doesn't look like differences exist between these peptides to the degree that is evident from comparing morphine to the opioid peptides. But I think that's still an open possibility. There may, in fact, be other ligands out there that haven't been appreciated. We're really presently looking into this question, And we're really very much interested in the possibility that there may be differences that have previously been not even detectable with some of our biochemical readouts between endogenously produced opioid neuropeptides. And the way we're trying to do that is using a similar strategy as we use for comparing opioid peptide and morphine as presented in the paper that we're discussing here.
Based on what you've learned about partial versus full agonism of mu-type opioid receptors, is it likely that you can extrapolate what you learned about the mu-type opioid receptors to any other receptors? Are there closely related receptors with similar ligands or similar signaling properties that might show the same sort of ligand-dependent differential regulation?
Again, this is a very interesting question, and I think that it is very likely that this is not going to be a unique property of morphine or of opioid receptors. Just thinking about opioids for now, we certainly have many examples, and there's a rich pharmacology with opioid ligands where it's already clear that ligands can differ in their relative efficacy for various receptor-mediated responses, as I mentioned, but also for driving phosphorylation of receptors at the net level and for determining things like receptor endocytosis or promoting receptor endocytosis. So morphine is not a unique compound among the opioids. And these kinds of observations have also been made in studies of many other receptors in this large family of 7 transmembrane or G protein coupled receptors. And this includes a large number of drug targets, for example, serotonin, dopamine, adrenergic receptors, to name a few. So I think that what we're beginning to understand here may very well generalize. And I should also mention that many clinically important drugs that are administered exogenously for therapeutic indications actually, from a pharmacologist's point of view, have partial agonist activity. So this concept of partial agonism as defined sort of classically in pharmacology is very widely appreciated, not just among the opioid receptors. The lesson that we've actually learned in understanding agonist selective regulation of the mu-type opioid receptor is that there seems to be, I shouldn't say seems to be, we have shown that there is in the cytoplasmic tail of the receptor a particular sequence in which multi-site phosphorylation is apparently a code for differential activation by one ligand versus another, in our case an opioid peptide and morphine. And that is quite interesting because it seems to be a quantitative code in that really what's happening there is multi-site phosphorylation, we believe, is actually sort of amplifying or sharpening the differences between ligands, which can be observed to be different from one another in other measures. But the multi-phosphorylation dependence, we think, is actually essentially functioning to sharpen the discrimination between the effects of these ligands. And because we also show that regulated endocytosis of the receptors is dependent upon this particular region of the cytoplasmic surface of the receptor accumulating multiple phosphorylations within the same region, that this sharpening then actually can be translated into agonist-selective differences in a physiologically important regulatory process such as endocytosis. This type of multi-site phosphorylation and, if you will, threshold detection type mechanism for discriminating stimuli is something that very well might generalize. There are certainly other examples of receptors in which multi-site phosphorylation occurs on their cytoplasmic surface. And in the 7 transmembrane receptor family, there are a couple of very nice examples of this. And going back really to classic studies with rhodopsin, the photoreceptor, with rhodopsin, there is also a limited region of the cytoplasmic tail of the receptor, which in which multi-site phosphorylation occurs. And the occurrence of multi-site phosphorylation in that receptor has an important function in producing a reproducible single photon response. That is, controlling the reproducibility and therefore the precision of phototransduction in the photoreceptor cell. That biologically is really kind of different than the role we envision being played in agonist discrimination by by sort of an analogous type of multiphosphorylation in the opioid receptor. But nevertheless, it suggests to us that this basic principle of multiphosphorylation and then multiphosphate-dependent interactions occurring downstream might actually be quite generalizable, and nature may have actually exploited or deployed this principle in multiple ways, depending upon the particular signaling system examined. I should also note that there's evidence from other groups and from our group with, for example, the beta adrenergic receptor, that in fact there is also multi-site phosphorylation of that receptor, which is relevant to its function.
Thank you, Dr. Van Zastro.
Thank you, and thank you for including our work in your program.
That was Mark Van Zastro, senior author of a paper published in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Lau, Trester, Zedlitz, and colleagues, and it's titled Quantitative Encoding of a Partial Agonist Effect on Individual Opioid Receptors by Multisite Phosphorylation and Threshold Detection. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.